My first thing is, I remember back when I took one of my many constitutional law classes I've had over my life, and the professor quoted Justice Felix Frankfurter in his famous dicta that you gotta stay out of the political thicket, meaning stop fooling with things like gerrymandering. And now the court is now starting to look at gerrymandering.
Yeah, which is somewhat surprising given that they had previously signaled that they were going to get out of the business of looking at gerrymandering. And here we really need to talk about racial gerrymandering versus partisan gerrymandering. The Supreme Court has all but said that partisan gerrymandering is okay, but that racial gerrymandering is not. And of course, the court just released a decision coming out of North Carolina. And in that particular case, right, there were these two congressional districts that had been withdrawn. And it was argued by the plaintiffs that the design was to pack in minority voters to make
as many minority voters as you could into those districts,
right,
which would leave them out of other districts which were more competitive, where they couldn't have made a difference if they were in the already packed black district.
Exactly right. So the Supreme Court in the past has said that you can, in fact, create minority-majority districts for the purpose of increasing minority representation in government. However, what you can't do is pack them in, as you just described, for the purposes of watering down competition. And a critical factor in this particular case, or at least it appeared that way to me, was that previously the two congressional districts that existed prior to these new ones were districts that had sent minority representatives to Congress, but they were majority white voter districts. So in other words, you weren't actually enhancing minority representation by creating minority majority districts. And so it looked like actually there was might be kind of racial animus going on here. And the court has very much struggled with this because there is this tension that exists between having partisan gerrymandering being acceptable, but racial gerrymandering not being acceptable because of the ways in which race and partisanship overlap, particularly as it pertains to persons of color in the United States. Right. So if, in fact, you want to consider creating a greater partisan parity in a district, one way to do that is to say, like, OK, where are black voters in the United States? They tend to be Democratic. Therefore, we'll kind of build them into a district. So you have to be very, very careful there. And the court has really struggled with kind of drawing those lines. And what they've essentially come up with is this test where if you're bringing a challenge on a gerrymandered district, the plaintiff has to show that race was the predominant factor in drawing the district lines. And then the burden shifts over to the state, and the state then has to prove that that the racial consideration serves a compelling government interest and is narrowly tailored to achieve that. Because, again, like enhancing minority representation is a compelling interest, but that has to be, in fact, the motivation rather than watering it down. And so in this case that the Supreme Court just decided, they said they basically upheld that two-step test, which was notable. And they did so in a way that suggested that it still has long-term viability. And is struck down these two laws. That's going to matter because we're not too far off from yet another opportunity to redraw district lines in 2020. So the fact that this continues on means that it will be very much in play for the politics of redistricting post-2020.
Now, Brett Hayes, do we think more black voters will come out? I mean, the participation level among black and poor Americans has not been that great in the past. If you make things more competitive, will more people show up at the polls?
The numbers tend to bear that out, right? In turnout tends to increase where there are tightly contested races. In terms of race, I mean, black turnout in the United States has kind of gone through a rather notable dramatic upswing, at least in presidential elections. Part of that, people have labeled the Obama effect. The question is, you know, whether in fact it's, you know, it will continue at those levels into the future. But whatever the case, you're right that wherever we can enhance competition, it tends to increase participation. It tends to increase turnout. And so, you know, in terms of having a more participatory democracy, the more we can do to have relative parity in electoral districts, the better off we are.
Now, when the court made its rulings with these two districts, how did it break down? Were they all the same old characters, the Republicans versus the Democratic guys, or were there some surprises?
Yeah, there's a big surprise in this one. You had the four liberal justices voting as a block and joined by the most conservative member of the court, Justice Thomas.
How come?
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure as to why. The one very obvious response has to do with race. But of course, Thomas has been not the most racially egalitarian justice when it comes to his jurisprudence. That being said, though, there have been some notable exceptions to that. I mean, one of the times when he spoke up on the court, which is always kind of a rare moment.
Two things we have to notice. One is that, of course, Justice Thomas, for those people who may not know, it seems incredible to me, happens to be African-American. And number two, he never talks.
That's right. It's a very rare event. But one of the times that he did speak during his tenure on the court was on what was essentially a cross-burning case about whether, in fact, you can punish hate speech. And so he does seem to have, some motivations towards racial issues that show up in times when you may not expect them. This may be one of those cases.
There is a general knowledge among political scientists, I think, that because of the power for state legislatures to gerrymander, they have had their way in increasing their congressional majority. In other words, in Texas, they came in, they didn't even wait till the state mandated gerrymander. They just went for it with everything they had, and a whole bunch of Democrats lost their seats just because of the ways they drew the districts.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. The 2020 election is like the key election. It's so difficult right now for Democrats to win control of the House. It's basically been projected that in order to kind of break even, Democratic candidates have to receive, and this is in the aggregate, 3% more of the total vote nationwide.
But right? Ironically, one of the best things, Brad Hayes, that the Democrats have going for them is Donald Trump. So many people hate him. He's so unpopular. It might actually translate it to taking back the House.
It could. And one of the things that you want to look at. So there's this polling question. It's called the generic poll. And it basically asks people, which party would you rather see in power, Democrats or Republicans? And right now, Democrats have a nice edge on that. It's about, 6%. Where you want to see that number is about 8% for Democrats to have a chance of retaking the majority of the House. If it's around 8%, if it's higher, it has strong predictive power to suggest that Democrats will be able to take back the House.
And there are a couple of by-elections we have to keep our eye on here.
Exactly right. And so we have places like down in Georgia where, a traditional Republican district, we've got a very competitive election. And so we'll have to see. And we'll have to see how Trump continues to perform or not perform as the case may be. But it does, right now, things are trending well for Democrats in that regard.
So Brett Hayes of Union College, when we come back the next time, let's talk about the strange case of General Flynn.
Sounds good.